This is my last session here. I'm Dave Bella, and this is the session on the good, the bad, and the demonic, although I'm not so sure that's the way it's going to end up, because this is my last session. I get on the bus in about an hour and a half, so I'm in the midst of saying goodbyes and thinking about all the wonderful things that have happened at Holden and wishing I'd be staying longer. I've really, in the last week, gotten to know the staff more, the volunteer staff who are here. And that's really special. They're really special people. And it's just been, I hate to leave in the sense that I almost feel bad that the first week I didn't get to know them quick enough. You know, you get that feeling. So I just want to say that. So this session is not going to be a highly structured one. It's going to be kind of the winding down. But I do have a few ideas on the good, the bad, and the demonic, and then we'll see where that goes, okay? So let me tell you why I picked this topic, although it's kind of hard for me to get back in that frame of thinking when I picked the topic. I do teach in engineering, and one of the courses that I teach deals with the limitations of technology, and I've shared some of those things in the sessions that have been here. The limitations of computers, the limitations of the technological way of thinking. And the technological way of thinking stresses the importance of productivity and efficiency and objectivity and precision and all of those things. Well, one of the things I found out, I get distressed about, is that when we started talking about the limitations of technology, people would start thinking that I was saying that technology was bad. And I wasn't trying to say that. Okay? So then they'd say, well, then is it good? And I'd say, well, I'm not trying to say that either. And then they'd say, well, is it just a tool? It's indifferent. I said, no, you never have just a tool. I mean, if you give someone a hammer, you give them the idea they're going to pound something if there's a message in it. And technology has messages. So, I had to think about that. How to even talk about it? It's not good, it's not bad, and it's not neutral. I wasn't trying to say either one of those things. And I can assure you, I don't think technology is bad. My leg is up on this chair because yesterday I cut myself while working as kind of an amateur maverick around here. And it hurt my pride more than my leg, but because I work with tools quite a bit and I hardly ever do this. And I was very thankful, though, that there was some good technology there, such as they could give me a shot, so when they gave me the stitches, it didn't hurt too much. I'm very thankful for that technology. And what it was the technology was there as a means for people to care for me, and that was really special. So I can't say that technology is bad. So here I was in this box. Well, what am I talking about? The limitations of technology. And then I came across a concept of the demonic, which sounds about as irrelevant for the modern day world, other than movies with these devils running around. And that's not what I'm talking about. But I was reading a book and it talked about Paul Tillich's notion of the demonic. Paul Tillich is a Protestant theologian, or was. When did he die? Did anybody know? I think he died a couple years, fairly recently. About when?
About
10 years ago. So he's not an ancient theologian. And Tillich had this concept of the demonic that seemed to make a lot of sense to me. And here's what he had to say. The demonic is always associated with the good. And I think when he said the good, he wrote it in capital G-O-O-D. So really good. It's always associated with the good. Well, that's strange. He says, something becomes demonic when a vehicle to goodness becomes overextended so that it becomes the substitute for goodness itself. Okay, you get the idea? A vehicle for goodness becomes overextended so it becomes the substitute for goodness itself. That's what the demonic was. And of course, as a theologian, he could go and he could say, the church, or church doctrine, let's just take as an example. This should be a vehicle to goodness, capital G. okay, to God's will. But when it becomes the substitute for goodness itself, it becomes the test, and they fight wars, you know, in the name of the Prince of Peace, well, then it becomes demonic. And it was a very good word, because there's this devilish kind of twisting around that something that is a vehicle to goodness becomes transformed into its opposite. And you get the idea, it becomes overextended. And I said, aha! That's what I'm trying to say about technology. It's not that technology is good or bad, but and obviously technology can be a vehicle to goodness. I mean, you know, when I went up to the hospital up there to get stitched up, I'm glad that that technology was there. Okay? I'm very glad. But as a culture and as individuals, we can overextend the vehicle to goodness until it becomes a substitute for goodness itself. So, for example, I think of technology primarily as a way of thinking, okay? Not devices, merely devices. And that way of thinking deals with efficiency and productivity and all those kinds of things that we have in our culture, those values. And it's not that productivity is necessarily bad. However, have you noticed how often it becomes defined as an end in itself? And you notice how a lot of times efficiency and being more productive becomes an end in yourself, where you're working for good things. And then you sit down and you want to relate to somebody and you feel like you should still be working. I mean, working for what? Well, I don't know, but I should still be working. So working then can become demonic. It can cut you off from the good. And we see this a lot with, obviously, working in a job can be a means to goodness. It provides services to people. It provides for the income for your family. But then we get so caught up in the vehicle to goodness that that becomes the good in itself. Who are you? I work at such and such. We define ourselves by our work. And then when little things come up, like playing with kids or listening to someone who has a problem, we feel a little nervous. We can't do it because we're so hooked in to the work as an end in itself, and that, I think, is what Tillich would call the demonic. Let me give you some other examples. I think, as I recall Tillich, and somebody might help me out on this, I think he said even the Bible could become demonic. So if, rather than it being the vehicle, the primary vehicle by which we, you know, come to God, the ultimate good, the source of goodness, it becomes the end in itself. Wasn't it Luther that described the Bible as the manger? Somebody want to help me on it? And the manger holds the baby, you know, Jesus. And we don't worship the manger. We worship what's in the manger. Am I right on that? Okay. So, in a sense, we could actually make the Bible become the demonic by quoting all sorts of verses and then not actually doing the things that the Bible is trying to communicate to us. The church could become demonic. Our work can become demonic. Many good traits, like, for example, living a simple life. We say we can live a simple life in order that we don't waste resources, in order that we can take time to care for other people, in order that we don't become arrogant. All of those things, you know, that can be a vehicle for goodness. But we can slip into living the simple life in itself might be an end in itself, to the point that we become so trapped in that that it becomes, you know, transformed into its opposite. Transformed. Somebody has some examples of where that might fit? No? Of the demonic? Yeah.
Could have
been. I can't judge.
You know, it could have been, he could have become tied to that lifestyle, and it would have been rather sad.
That could have become the model, right. I think we have to watch out that we don't use it as a label, okay? Actually, it's kind of a message we have to give to ourselves, I think. We have to ask ourselves, okay, yes, I'm really pursuing, you know, the good, God's will. And we have to watch out so we don't confuse that, you know, that pursuit with the actual vehicles, the actual ways that we're doing that, so that we don't become trapped. And I think we do get messages when that's happening. I think we do get some messages. There is a spiritual revelation in there. We begin to feel like somehow something is a little pointless. We begin to feel a little uncomfortable. And then I think it's time in a community in particular to share, you know, what we're doing, to check in with that community. Okay, some other ideas on that. Herman?
I wonder if it's related something to the idea of idolatry, that is, you worship something that the religions are using as a means of that sort of thing. One of the ways in which that I've found that helpful in sorting that out has to do with our preoccupation as a country with security.
Yes.
And security is a very good thing. And the primary role, probably, that a government has is to provide security for everyone. But one of the important roles is to provide security. But the danger, if you get so preoccupied with security, that the very thing that you want to provide eludes you and becomes demonic and destroys the very thing you're trying to protect. It's like the image of a village that spends all its efforts in building walls around itself so that it'll be secure, but it doesn't plant the gardens or it doesn't care for the things that need the village to be healthy. It isn't that it's wrong for it to be concerned about security, but sometimes when you're overly concerned about it, preoccupied with it, and that has what is a good, and we all need security, becomes idolatrous or demonic, whatever word you want to use for it, out of proportion.
That's right.
And it seems to me that the Christian faith is something that's one of the things, gifts that Christians have to offer to the country in which they live, to help sort out the priorities and to call into question any element of a culture that seems to become demonic, for example.
Very good. Paul, you had something.
Well, you mentioned a word here a while ago, and that's become one of the great buzzwords of our society, and that's productivity. And I was kind of amused. I was reading the Wall Street Journal here the other day, and there's quite an article on productivity, which they run occasionally, and seeming concerned that somehow or other they're not reaching the goals that they had hoped for. And it seems to me that that is a very elusive thing, but yet it can be something that's the most important thing. Hey, productivity.
Right. And we say, well, if we're saying productive so that we can have more justice, so that we can care for the needs of people, well then, you know, that becomes one of the vehicles for doing something that we're really called to do. But too often I see that productivity gets defined in itself, and I'll see people hear people give a speech or read a thing on increasing productivity, and they never say productivity for what or of what.
Yeah, they don't define it.
Okay. Or efficiency. I mean, I would hope, for example, that, you know, in Nazi Germany, when they had the extermination camps, inefficiency would have been the thing to work for. One of the tragedies of that whole disaster was it was so darn efficient. Okay? Yes?
You were asking for examples, and I like them, and I've been thinking idolatry too, and you're saying
demonic.
And I see a trap sometimes that I think we as Lutherans fall into our tradition.
Right.
And we have always done it that way, right. So that must be holy, that must be the way to do it. And we almost end up worshiping, idealizing demonic and.
Right. Also, a tradition could be, in a sense, the end in itself. Yes?
Also, the discussion of technology, and particularly a couple days ago about nuclear deterrence, where we're turning more and more control over to this to technology,
yeah,
because of the need for instant response and all of that. And it seems somehow wrong to me to turn over the control to the technology itself. because it's not that correct.
Yeah, right.
You know, your work is, so it isn't bad.
That's right.
Unless you're talking about life and death.
Yeah, right.
And yet we all fall into this trap because I've seen in today's society, it is a valid excuse to say that the computer is down.
Yeah, oh yes.
We
yes.
all accept this.
Yeah.
You know, the computer's now, well, nothing can be done.
So no one's fault.
It's nobody's fault. That's right.
Just find out the bank account balance.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And so you're saying, you know, we might have a war and it's nobody's fault.
That's right. I think that's why we have to maintain the human element.
That's right. The responsibility.
That's right. The responsibility falls on a person.
Yeah. And a community and a person. Okay?
And it is truly demonic. To give that away, to not accept the responsibility.
There's Don that's on the staff when we had a session on the computers, and he says, "Do you remember what the symbol is for the Apple computer?"
I love
it.
It's an apple with a bite out of it. All of a sudden, I started thinking about that in terms of the Genesis. It never hit me back in the Now, I don't know what the history is, how they selected that one. There might have been somebody there who knew a lot more than... Okay, somebody else had it, yeah.
Just an extension of what you said. Have you ever noticed that anybody that gets switched over to a computer system has no backup? They all of a sudden have no way of finding out information if the computer is down.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
They don't have any way of coming back.
Gee, I'm sorry, I can't. I don't know how to do that. The computer's down.
They used to do it that way another way all the time, but there's no backup system for anybody that gets computer.
Or, even if there is a backup, it becomes a nice way of washing your hands of the responsibility, which is, I think, what you're saying. We kind of give up the responsibility. So that might be part of the sign of the demonic. We give up the responsibility of asking the question why. We just do it. We stop asking that question why. That might be one... of the signs of the demonic. Okay. Some other examples. Yeah, Herbert.
Well, you know, this is the other side, way the other end from the technology, but there's a lot of interest in what's a personal development. I mean, big sales now has to do with self-fulfillment and
okay.
that kind of thing.
Feeling good.
That's right. Happiness and all that sort of thing. And all of which is wonderful. I mean, it's terrific if you know, but you know, the surest guarantee that you're not going to be happy is if you're always thinking about, now, how can I be happy?
Right.
And somehow that very preoccupation with that prevents you from that comes more as a fruit of life rather than as something you go for directly. If you're always preoccupied with how am I going to feel a little better, that sort of thing, you never feel better. I mean, it doesn't come. So it's a perfect example, it seems to me, of how that, which is a good thing,
right.
We all love to have that. But if that's what you go for, if that's what you live for, you deny yourself the chance of experiencing.
I think one of the things in terms that happens in the demonic is we have a more difficult time accepting gifts. A gift is like happiness can be a gift.
Yeah.
All of a sudden it comes and you accept it. Technology we can treat as a gift. But when it becomes demonic, it becomes a trap.
Sure.
It becomes it's transformed into its opposite. Okay?
So relationships could be that way then too.
That's right. Relationships could be that way where you say, I have to behave this particular way. Okay? Because that's the right way to behave. Well, obviously we do need some behavioral guidelines and we do need some laws and we do need some guidelines like in a marriage or I mean, you know, we do have models and guidelines, but those are means to a goodness that's more than any of the rules, okay, in all cases. It's more than any of the rules or any of the definitions.
I think she's talking about something a little different. Yeah. Were you with that love and addiction stuff?
Yeah, that's exactly.
Oh, okay. Why don't you expand? Okay.
Okay, well, he was pointing out how a love relationship can both be positive and negative thing, depending on whether you're in love with somebody or you're addicted to them.
Oh.
And that keeps us the addicted in the same sense that you're demonic.
Okay,
whereas
so
it's become the end in itself. It's not reaching out to other people, but it's my need to get this person self-consuming.
So it's a needy kind of consuming kind of thing.
It's possession. I'm good with possession when you're talking demonic.
Oh, okay, so possess someone. Oh, yeah. So the word possess. possession. You become possessed by it.
Oh, that's great.
The Christian mother devoting all of her time to her children and not taking life from herself.
Right.
That's good, but it's extensive. It's uncountable.
Okay, very good. Okay, so that, you know, taking care of a child or that relationship you're saying, let me paraphrase it, it becomes the end in itself, and that possesses you, that whole thing, that becomes the definition of who you are. There's no openness to who you are. Then you become possessed by the relationship, the demonic. There's the language coming in. Yes.
I was just thinking, too, you know, this pursuit that you're talking about of happiness, oh. It also has gotten into the pursuit of superlative health and superlative strength and beautiful bodies and all this. And out of that comes abortion. Because to my mind, you know, a lot of women are don't see themselves as beautiful when they're pregnant. So they want to get rid of that. Mm-hmm. They don't want to have to get into that. And is that not demonic?
I think that can't. I think when you say, when people, obviously it's good to take care of yourself physically. I mean, we would say that. But when you become possessed by that, I like that, then it becomes demonic. I think suffering can also become demonic. I mean, we identify as Christ certainly did suffer. But I don't think he was into suffering. I mean, that wasn't the end, the purpose of it. I mean, you know, in the Garden of Gethsemane, when he cries out in that anguish, if you could take this from me, do it, but your will be done. I mean, he didn't like it. Okay, so he wasn't just into the suffering. In fact, he was criticized sometimes for having too much fun, going to people's houses, and he was criticized for that. Okay, so, I mean, I think a pain and suffering, the martyr, the person, not the person who truly is a martyr, but the person who identifies with the martyr role and gets possessed by the martyr role, and we can all slip into that. We can all slip into that. That, we can become possessed by that too. Other examples? Yes?
Some of the charismatic movements, it's real important to be born again, and that time and that place becomes almost the focal point, and they celebrate, well, it's been a year and 6 months since I was born again on the rock, and blah, 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 so on and so forth. They get so carried away with the actual point that they forget what the meaning was.
Yes. That can be it. Again, I'm not going to say that all people who say that, you know, that's the demonic, but that certainly could. You could be so possessed by that need to feel a particular way, to speak in tongues or to whatever it might be, that becomes the end in itself. That becomes the end in itself. That can happen. It's very interesting when you say that, because the born-again phrase, and again, people correct me if I get off, because I'm certainly not a biblical scholar on this, but the born-again phrase comes when Jesus is talking to Nicodemus. He says, you must be born again. He says, how can I be born again? He says, you must be born of the Spirit. Okay? Well, it sounds like they're having a good time next door.
Okay, morning, Turkey.
Oh, that's great. I'm getting a little early here. But then, do you remember, that's a lot of times where people stop the story. You must be born of the Spirit. Do you remember what he said? How the story continues? No, not the water. He says, well, what does it mean? What's a person like born of the Spirit? Doesn't Nicodemus ask that question? And isn't that when he says it's like the wind? You're not sure where it's coming or where it's going, but you know its presence. Wow. I mean, now there is, you know, and if you want to know what that means, just go out and lay down and listen to that wind coming. You're not sure where it's coming or where it's going, but you know its presence. So anytime that we have a fixed definition of what it means to be born again or whatever, as we become possessed, I think it's good to remember those words of Christ. We're really not sure where it's coming or where it's going, but you know its presence. And that is the Spirit. That is the Spirit. And there's every time I think of that, I find myself smiling. There's a certain joy in that, because, you know, there's a certain freedom there. Oh, other examples. Yes, Paul.
Well, I was trying to think of something in technology that would demonstrate it, please, both the good and the demonic. And I think of an occasion several years ago where I visited the laboratory at Los Alamos, New Mexico.
Oh, yeah.
And at that time, I had the privilege to see a new product that was being developed that used maser beams to hopefully treat cancers and to treat just the spot and not the area of the mouth. And that was the idea of it. And at that time, I was very privileged to see this thing. And that, then afterward, I was touring there, and then I saw the prototype of the atomic bomb, which of course was developed there. And of course, that gave me an altogether different feeling. But
you want to share? You told me the story about when you were coming in on the plane.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Share that story with
you. Yeah, we were coming in on the plane. My mission. I was a hospital administrator, and they, our organization, had acquired this site from the government, just like this one. $1 cost, just like Holden Village is given here. And they had a hospital there, and we were looking at a particular piece of equipment. So our pathologist and myself and his brother were flying a small plane in there. And when you come into this place, it's a narrow strip. Now, I'm not a Navy pilot, but I can imagine what it would be to land on a landing craft. Some of you maybe had the experience. But we're coming in on this strip, and all of a sudden, the crackling noise on the intercom, and this fellow in a very serious voice said, "Now," he said, "when you come in there," he says, "you stay on a certain course." He says, "if you veer to the left or to the right," he says, "we will shoot you down." And I looked out there and here were people beams on either side of us. Of course, this was all the secret work that was going on there. And the security is tremendous there.
That's quite a joke when you heard that. This might be some of the security demonic creeping in there. Another part, I think, in the demonic has to do with what could happen. I'm not saying it does, but in the medical area where you spend so much money and effort on the equipment, and then in terms of the nurses, you have to cut down. Mm-hmm. And so that the nurses can't spend much time with the people, and the little things like a person's dying and having the nurse who holds their hand, that somehow doesn't fit into the equation. That doesn't fit into... And so then all of the technological ways of figuring things that out, that becomes demonic. That becomes an end in itself. And the very fact that the purpose of the whole hospital is to care for people, to truly care for them, that we lose sight of that, and then the very caring acts that we seek, you know, that really are essential, they get eliminated in the name of efficiency and order. Let me get over here, because while we're on the hospital, then we'll get over to you.
Yeah, I just want to piggyback on what you said, because that strikes another thing within me. About 12 years ago, I had the extreme privilege of building a new hospital from the ground up on a new site with everything all new. And we developed a concept of all single rooms in which the nurse spends all of her time with the patient. She's not out running in the hall. There's no nursing station. She doesn't get supplies. We have other people that bring the supplies. And if any of you ever come to Lubbock, because I've retired, so I'm out of it, but I'm very proud of it. And you're going to see one of the most unique systems of care, not in size, but in design and system. And this is one where it eliminates what you're talking about. And that's precisely what we have in mind.
Subject is that they went that route and their all this machinery is hooked up to babies and they're barely hanging on and not responding. And they finally came up with a plan of actually letting the parent come in and sit by the incubator and reach in there and hold and play with the baby. And lo and behold, the baby started responding to this help that was getting at that point. It really started to grow and to be better.
Oh, that's great. That's great.
Do you see that? Is that true?
Well, I've had a privilege of working in units where we were encouraged to stroke, where we were encouraged to touch. The smaller the baby, the less you handle that child. But I tend to be a very sensitive type of individual. When do you call parents?
Wow. Okay, heavy decisions. Okay, other examples.
Yes, I read something not too long ago that's an indicator about what would be demonic, or in the sense it was idolatrous. It said idolatry is any time you give something more value than it deserves.
It becomes the end in itself.
Yeah, anything that's given more value than it deserves. So it can be valuable, but if you give it more value, then it's lost its...
Okay, yeah.
So the question for is, I have one that doesn't have anything to do with technology per se, but it was mentioned in church tradition, if you start to almost worship the tradition. If you work on church staff, as I do, it's very easy, and I think pastors or anybody else who works on church staff would agree, to start doing all the busy work and doing all the work for church, forgetting what in the world you're doing it for. You just have to keep on running all the time.
Yes,
what these programs are for.
I think, the sacrament of communion is maybe something that brings us back to the essentials. I find that experience quite often is I'll get off on this tangent and doing things, and then the communion somehow pokes through that. And maybe that's what a sacrament really is supposed to do. It's not that I get all these nice, neat answers to things, but there's a renewal there that is something precious.
Well, group in there, that's good and demonic. They're having a good time.
They're having a good, well, let's. I think that's good. Usually, most of the time, good smiles and laughter, unless they become it, you're right. When people try to laugh, it usually shows, I think. Okay, other observations. Yeah.
Well, speaking about tradition, I went to a church for a while in St. Paul that wasn't going to be bound by any traditions. Everything was going to be contemporary, and we weren't going to be locked into traditions, and it really become bound to being
demonic.
And so the alternative then took on a kind of demonic dimension, because if it wasn't contemporary, fresh, and just as good as it was before, it wasn't good anymore.
I think maybe one of the gifts we have that helps us to break out of demonic patterns is the ability to laugh at ourselves. I think when we have that ability to laugh at ourselves and share in that joy, not because we don't make the laughter in a sense an end in itself, we don't become possessed by it, but the idea that it kind of frees us, it kind of loosens things up, and we don't. And sometimes tears and crying are the same way. It breaks out of that. It's one of the things we can do. I think it would be, interesting. Does anybody, in terms of their understanding of history, what were some of the perceptions, the more ancient perceptions of dealing with the demonic? Anybody have I don't know enough about the church history and how that, when that imagery was very important to them, and now it's not to us, what were some of the things that they did? Sometimes, we tend to put them down. We tend to think, oh boy, they were just, they didn't know what they were talking about. And, they're kind of primitive and all the rest of that. Maybe they knew a lot more than we give them credit for. Does anybody have any?
It's a hard question. One suggestion that was made earlier, sometimes in trying, because a thing can be made demonic, we back off from it entirely.
Oh, yes.
And so...
That's what you were saying, the tradition.
Yeah, that's right. That's what reminded me about that, because it can be abused. You overreact the other way. Mm-hmm. And so the whole business of stewardship is to use a thing in its perspective without it becoming demonizing things, whatever it is, means not that you throw it away entirely, but that you put it into its proper place. Mm-hmm. Often, however, being human as we are, we sort of end up kind of throwing it away entirely for a while until we're ready to come back and pick it up again.
That's true. Think of, can everything any examples on that where you suspect something might be demonic? You've given one in terms of the condition, or could be. That's what I hear them saying. Mm-hmm. And so then we just stay away from it. And it becomes almost the reverse. Mm-hmm. Any examples?
All the old ideas of card playing, insurance, that kind of thing, that was all bad. Now we say it's all good. And yeah. We could go either way with something like that. Cosmetics.
Cosmetics would be something, yeah.
Well, getting back to one of our discussions the other day on the television, a lot of people are now staying completely away from television. They're putting away because they say it takes up too much of our time and they're missing a lot of good stuff, too.
Yes?
The whole matter of human sexuality comes to mind. A vehicle for good.
Right. Oh,
a
very
good. For procreation, a vehicle for pleasure. But when that then is no longer the vehicle for good,
it comes to end in itself.
I think that's why sexuality is so tied into worship in most of any religion, because it becomes this focal point of good and evil. Also in the Christian religion, how we can either go to Puritanism or go to libertarianism.
Well, that's a good example.
History of the church, even some of the emphasis on celibacy, may not all come from the Spirit.
So it could be a response like Herman was saying, where you're afraid it might go to the demonic, so you go to the opposite extreme to avoid it. And certainly television, it seems to me, quite often, I don't mean to pick up television after your statement, but quite often it does present, I think, the demonic side of the sexual relationship. It becomes a thing in itself, like they chalk off numbers and conquest. Possession, right, it's a possession. And people become possessed by it, and you possess someone through it, and you become possessed by it itself. The people that you relate to are determined solely by that. Very good example. Very good example.
I played golf recently, just had to pick up a couple guys, and they were going down to the Caribbean, and there were three of them, and the whole experience was defined in terms of sexual conquests, mm-hmm. and of themselves, and the women they were going to meet, what their body was going to look like, and is really becoming an exploitation of themselves and others, which means
yes, very good. You see, if we're left with a choice between good and bad, you see, that's not enough. Obviously, in terms of sex, I mean, you can't do that. And so the demonic gives us a little bit of another way of looking at that relationship.
Can't anything that is good become demonic if it's in excess?
Yes, I think, what Tillich said, he said the demonic is always associated with the good. Okay? But when it becomes an end in itself, rather than a means to goodness, so the sexual relationship, when it becomes an end in itself, rather than a way of a more caring, full relationship, and then it becomes demonic. Is somebody else?
Come back to your idea about how do you make things not demonic. Of course, what you were getting at was exorcism, process of exorcising the demons. Fetichevsky has a marvelous play about that called The Tenth Man. In the Jewish tradition, you have to have 10 people present in order to conduct a prayer service, to have, what do they call it? There's a name for that, to have a quorum. So there's this person that comes along who's possessed by a demon, who's emotionally troubled. So they decide that what's wrong with this woman is that she's possessed with a demon. So they recruit, they're only 9 of them there, so they recruit a person, and he's a Jewish person who's kind of fallen away, and he's kind of a person of the world, and kind of making a success, and so on, but he's a Jewish heritage, so they bring him in. And so they have this ceremony, that they go through the ceremony to exorcise a demon out of this woman who's emotionally troubled. And then the lights black out and a body crumbles to the floor, and the lights flash on again, and here it's this fellow that they recruited from the modern world.
You got an exorcist.
I don't know the evil spirit of death. It wasn't the woman at all. So it was an example about how our, you know, like excessive modernism or whatever.
You have the other story. You want to tell the other story about the guy who died? You told me.
Well, that's a long story. I don't know. I think so.
I'll just tell it quick. Okay? I'm going to tell this story where this guy's, I guess, robbing a bank. It's a TV show or something.
It's Rod Serling.
And he gets shot, and he wakes up, and he's in this fantastic hotel, and he can have anything he wants. And he can have female companionship, food, or he can gamble, he can do whatever he wants. And so he goes down and plays the slot machines. Every time he pulls it, he wins. And he complains, well, not every time. So when you want to win half the time? Well, no, that's not the point. So the servant who's there says, "What would you like to play pool?" "Oh yeah." So he gets the pool table and hits it, and all the balls go in the pot. So he's beginning to wonder about this, and then finally he says, "Well, there is one thing I'd like to do." He says, "I'd like to see some of my friends, and I realize that, you know, maybe they didn't make it into heaven." And this guy says, "What makes you think you're in heaven?" So we begin to get that. I think in terms of maybe avoiding the demonic, obviously it takes a certain amount of reflection. I think that's one of the things on our lives. And I think the one thing we have as Christians that's so precious is the grace that we are given God's care and acceptance. You know, we don't earn it. So we're given that, and that gives us the freedom to go ahead and make mistakes, to go on out and become involved in the world. And then, even if it turns out a failure, we can still laugh. In fact, maybe especially when it turns out a failure, we can laugh. And then you never know whether it really is a failure or not. Do you ever have that happen? You think it was a total failure. And then someone comes up later, "Oh, that was the most meaningful thing." You say, "Wow." So we're in a world where we're full of surprises and acceptance. And that gives us a tremendous amount of freedom to not get trapped. It gives us freedom to go ahead and try some things that, you know, that may be different. It gives us freedom to fail. And then that failure quite often gets redeemed in surprising ways. And it's true. We're not sure where we're coming and where we're going, but there is a presence there. There is a presence there. There is a presence that causes us to smile, not because we've done all these wonderful things, but in spite of the fact that we haven't, or we're not sure, or maybe we have, and maybe we haven't. Yes?
You just used the word freedom, didn't you?
Yes.
And it seems like whenever someone is either trying to avoid the demonic or is involved with the demonic, in your sense of the term, there's a lot of fear involved. Yeah. People spend an awful lot of time running away, whether it was the fear of the traditional liturgy over here or whatever. But with your idea concept of freedom, it seems in a way that's what Holden Village is about.
Yes.
So we're free to come up here and listen to things we don't necessarily agree with.
Right.
And then it's whether you're going to run from it and pray or take it in and say, "He's all wet."
Yep, that's right. We have that freedom to participate and not just get the things back that we want. Because we don't, that's part of the price of freedom, is you don't just get back what you want. That was the guy with the pool table that was always going, and that was not heaven. He was getting everything he thought he wanted and then say, "Wait a minute, that's not what I want." Okay. So we do have, I think, you know, in our Christian faith, the notion of grace, the notion that we have grace, not just a notion, but we have grace, and we have a community that we can share that in, even though we don't all agree, and even though we make terrible mistakes, and even though we're not sure where we're going, that's something I think we can celebrate. And it's a community where we can get together and we can smile. And not because we're trying hard to smile, but because it's a gift that's given to us. And a gift that we don't want to cut off. Mm-hmm.
What are some of the things that worry you or concern you in the areas of technology here?
Well, I'll share some things. When I deal with the arms race issues, as I deal more into it, I end up with a lot of self-doubts about myself. For example, on the one hand, I'd say, you know, I look at that move or that presentation you had on Gandhi, and I say, you know, boy, that is fantastic. And then there's another part of me saying, well, you just want to be this nice, holy person, okay? And yet, I look at Gandhi and I have tremendous respect. And then there's another part of me that says, oh, but that would make your questions easier. And then I go ahead and say, all right, then I'll struggle with the difficult questions. And another part of me says, well, are you just going on an intellectual head trip? Or are you just fascinated with this technology? And then another part of me, and I don't resolve that. There's this, as I push further and further, there's this unsettling nature in there, okay, that I have there. And I don't have answers. I don't have answers. And I think that what ends up with is, I'm just, you know, thank God I don't have to have answers. I can still struggle within that because I'm accepted and I'm called. But when I'm really pushed down to some of these things, I really end up having, you know, these questions that are insecure questions. Do you know what I mean? You're just not sure, you know, are you doing the right thing, the wrong thing? Are you just kidding yourself? Are you just trying to do something so you can impress people? Are you trying to... And then if I say, oh, well, I won't do that, or I say, well, are you just trying to cop out, or you're just trying to ignore all these problems? And you know, you get in that box, and there's no way out. There's no way for me out of that, because those problems will always be there. And that's the time where it's important to recognize that we are called by God, and we are called to become involved, not because we have the answers, but in spite of the fact that we don't. Mm-hmm. And that... So, you know, that's what I encountered. And is that kind of what you were saying? Yeah, I've really had that in terms of the arms race. You know, I started saying, well, if I had the power to make all the decisions, I'm glad I don't. Yes?
In the session the other day, you were talking about some of your students. So you give them a problem and you say you can't do it, and they do it. You know, you had experiences where some of these students, in effect, scare you, and you're saying, what am I doing here? What am I doing teaching this?
Yeah, I've had that experience where I'll do a course on, say, environmental effects problems or the arms race, and I feel the class becoming more and more cynical. And then I start saying, why am I doing this? Is my purpose to make people cynics? And I don't mean, I mean deep cynics, people who just become immobilized. I mean, we all have a certain cynical streak to us that may be to a little degree healthy, but that where it becomes an end in itself, the cynicism. And I say, what am I doing? And what I have found in those situations is somehow that concept of grace, and you can't use that language in an engineering class, but the idea that hope is a gift, you don't have to come up with a solution of all the problems, and even if you're wrong, you can get involved. And I find some engineers, some of my students, engineering students, when they realize that they don't have to solve all the problems in the world in order to feel hopeful, and they really start to believe that, it's like a load off them. So that, and it's not a load that says, oh, now I can be happy and forget all these problems. It's not that at all. It's now I can feel hopeful and get involved despite the fact that I don't know how to solve the problems. So there's a certain joy that comes through, and you'll actually see the smile on their face when they catch that. And those are special times as a teacher where if all they remembered is the smile from the course would have been successful. If they forgot all the rest of the stuff and remembered the smile. The smile that says, I can have hope. I don't have the answers, but I'm going to go on out and work anyhow. And that's... Okay, other little things you might want to share. I think we're getting near the end. Yes?
Well, I've been to several of your sessions now, and And one of the things that seems to me anyway, to come out of every one of them is this business of paradoxes.
Yes.
Everything is paradoxical when taken, and we're always seemingly examining the two extremes, which always sets up a paradox. And this session has been no exception. I just wanted to throw that out as a comment.
I think we need is, you know, I think we could learn a lot from the Jewish tradition in terms of dealing with paradoxes. And because I think they can handle it better, they celebrate paradox. And when I try to explain that to myself, I picture myself here saying, boy, I don't have the answers, and that doesn't seem to fit together, and that just, what's going on here? And there's this Jewish rabbi behind me that says, well, would you like to live in a world where everything fits together like a machine? And I say, well, no. Well, then don't complain when it doesn't. So I have that, so that there is something to celebrate in the fact that we don't have to have the world all together. And in the paradoxes, there's some tremendous discovery that we can have there. And I think we need to celebrate the fact that there are paradoxes. And again, I refer back to Elmer Witt's service last week, because it was full of paradoxes. I mean, almost every sentence was a paradox. If it's on tape, go back and listen to it. The one I remember, Jesus tells us, there are no answers, and I am it. Remember that? Now talk about, whoo, what's this? There are no answers, and I am it. Whoo, there's paradox. There's paradox. And yet, you begin to sense, yeah, there's something there. And we smile when we get the paradox. And we're empowered because we accepted the gift of grace. And we can go on out into this crazy world, and we do make a difference, and we're called by God himself or herself to get involved. Mm-hmm. Despite the fact that we don't have the answers. Now that is a little crazy. But remember what Jesus told Nicodemus about the Spirit. You're not sure where it's coming or where it's going, but you know its presence.
That's very Lutheran, too, to live in paradox.
Yeah. A lot of times, though, we try to get laws and rules to avoid that.
My structure, that.
Security. Security becomes demonic, just like Irvin said. Okay.
David?
Yes?
Well, I've been associated with this gentleman for a couple of weeks, and as we close here, I just have just one thing I want to say about him. He's the epitome of infectious enthusiasm.
Thank you.